Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Informal Paranormal, our first episode. Today is June 14th, Monday, and my name's Doug Kelly. I'm here with John Rossi. Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing, Doug? Hello, everyone.
Good to have everybody with us, and tonight, what we've done here is we've combined our members and public chat. We've typically had a members chat on Monday nights, sometimes a public chat on Mondays and other nights. So we decided to do something a little different. We decided to kind of bring the chat into the radio chat room and do a radio broadcast at the same time. And so we're happy you could join us. And this is what the name says, Informal Paranormal. That means it's not going to be rigidly structured. It's going to be discussions and speculations and just a little bit of having fun. And so we're inviting you to join us in the chat room. If you want to call in and make a point or ask a question or state a perspective or share an investigation or you have it, you're more than welcome to. In fact, you're invited to. We're hoping that people will pop in on the call lines. We'll hope that you'll be there in the chat room and talk about whatever. So, you know, come and join us and have a little fun. That's what this hour is supposed to be about, and I'm pretty sure it was all John's idea anyway. So if it fails, it's his fault.
All right.
So tonight we are going to talk about stuff, right? Stuff.
Yeah.
Now the other night, of course, we had a special live investigation broadcast, and John's investigation at, what is it,
Huckfield Battlefield.
Yeah. So that was an interesting conversation, and one of your members, I think it was Joel, wasn't it, who said he thought he'd seen that entity the other night. Did you have anything else happen after we got done with the broadcast?
No, shortly after the broadcast, I went ahead and I stayed at our command post, if you will, and I had Joel and Tim go ahead and walk the trail and check out some other areas in the battlefield. Just, you know, see what was going on there. And they thought it seemed rather flat. They didn't have any experiences to speak of. At this point, all I've reviewed is the digital still photos that I took that night, and there was nothing of significance on those photos. Tomorrow I'll begin reviewing the video, in particular the video that was hooked up to the thermal camera.
Yeah, that'll be cool, huh? Hopefully you got something on that.
I can only hope.
Juan can only hope. All right, so we're going to talk about stuff. Maybe you've got some ideas. I've got some ideas. And those of you in the chat room, if you have questions or concepts or topics, you know, write them down. Type them in the chat room. Call in the call line there if you have a phone. You can call us. I'll put the number in the chat room, but it is right there on your screen, 347-945-7799, and you can just pop in, make a comment, ask a question, state a perspective, tell us about an investigation you had. In fact, you know, I'll invite that. You know, did you have a recent investigation that you thought was fairly interesting? Maybe you had something happen. Well, call us up and let's talk about it. If you have you're on the same page. Go ahead.
Okay. Actually, I was going to ask Sharon if she thought that perhaps Doug is a skinwalker. You know, at times I thought that there's a possibility there may be some kind of alien background to Doug, but the more I think about skinwalkers, I'm thinking that's a possibility too, Sharon. So what do you think?
Yeah. You know, I guess more than one psychic have told me I'm alien. So, what can I say to that? You know, yeah, I'm an alien. I'm not the alien. I have a few ideas of who might be, but not me.
the psychic that told me that you were an alien, I think, ultimately turned out to be rather psychotic, so I'm not sure that I put a whole lot of faith in what he was saying. But.
Oh, okay, good. So I'm not an alien. There you have it.
Well, no, I didn't say that. I'm just saying that that one particular opinion was pretty questionable, so.
Well, I guess I can fall back on the other psychic who told me I was alien. I forget who that was now, but somebody else told me that, too. All right, so Sharon is looking for somebody to come in and talk about skinwalkers. Cool. Sharon and her skinwalkers, she thinks I'm a skinwalker now because I've given her so much crap about it. So give us a call, folks. Chime in. This is what this is for. Don't be shy. This is the time when you can call in. I mean, there's not a ton of people that are listening right now, so you don't have to worry about, you know, being embarrassed or anything. I mean, hey, we embarrass ourselves all the time, right?
No, absolutely.
We have absolutely. No shame.
Yeah.
Well, I was on the show yesterday with Jason from Paranormal Guys. He's listening. Hey, Jason. Nice show. Good show. Enjoyed that a lot. He even did a YouTube video up. That was amazing. I forget. Didn't really say anything to him about it, but that was interesting, Jason. Now I'm a celeb on YouTube. What can
you know,
I say?
You know, I didn't want to be rude, well, more rude than I was in terms of what I was posting on Jason's show, but I had really intended to ask you, Doug, if you'd be willing to sing a song for us. So maybe tonight's the night?
Yeah, I don't think so.
And one other thing, can you confirm or deny that you were actually part of the Milli Vanilli group at some point?
I can deny that, yeah. Although I did like their song.
Well, you know, if you took a look at those two guys, the whole concept of aliens infiltrating our their Earth and the population, you know, just think about those two and the whole thing that went down with that, so... I think that that's a, you know, possibility.
Yep. What can I say about that? All right, so let's come up with a topic here. Let's get this thing headed in a direction. Let's talk about overlapping. That's something that we've chatted about a little bit, and I think it's important, the fact that these different venues, these different fields that are all part of the paranormal field kind of overlap in phenomena. For example, you know, some people have stated that they had a visit by you know, a dead relative, and then they have missing time. You know, that's happened. You know,
yes.
And so that's obviously gets me suspicious of... an abduction event. You know, what's really interesting is a lot of abductees have PK phenomena, psychokinesis events happening afterwards and around that time.
Yeah, I've read that too, and also, you know, enhanced, like, psychic events as well. So, you know, what comes to mind to me is perhaps their brain ends up being stimulated in such a way that part of the... you know, the mind becomes, you know, activated, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the other thing, too, is that I have yet to come across anybody who's experienced what I would say is more genuine paranormal phenomena of any kind that didn't have some kind of psychic sensitivity. Have you?
Well, I think that people, the more sensitive they are, if you will, seems to have more experiences. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't come across anybody that hasn't had a higher degree of psychic sensitivity that's experienced this stuff. I mean, they all seem to. Of course, PK is part of that.
Well, you know, actually, you know, when you were talking with Tim the other night on the investigation, you know, he mentioned that, you know, over time that he's becoming more sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And I truly believe that everyone has that ability. And it's
yeah.
that over time we shut it down or we create so many filters in our day-to-day life, we lose touch with that. you know, one of the things for me I find very compelling when I've done investigations involving private families and there's children involved, you know, frequently the children are talking about their imaginary friends. And the parents are kind of initially just, you know, like, oh, yeah, that's make-believe. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I actually don't think that it is make-believe a lot of the time. I think that the children haven't been conditioned not to hear it and not to see it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so they experience it. Whereas over time, I think that we are told these things don't exist and that we're not actually hearing these things, that it's all in our imagination. So we create these filters and we lose that ability.
So tell me this, John. When you were a child, did you have an imaginary friend?
Not that I can remember at this point. And that's the other thing. You know, I think that, you know, over time, when you're being told something is other than it is, that you can condition it right out of your memory. But one of the things that I do remember as a kid, and I remember, you know, my parents and grandparents always telling me it was my imagination, that I would hear, when I'd be out in the yard, especially like in the evening and stuff like that, I would hear people walking through the yard. I could hear the, like, the footsteps on, like, the leaves and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I'd get all freaked out because I wouldn't see anything. But I could hear the walking, and, you know, I'd run in the house and say, you know, there's someone walking in the yard, but I can't see him. And it's like, oh, John, it's your imagination.
Uh-huh.
But in retrospect, I'm not so sure that was my imagination. I think that I was hearing something walking across the yard. But what I was being told every time something like that happened was that it was my imagination and it wasn't a real event. So, I can totally understand how people can become disconnected from that part of their psyche, if you will.
Well, you know, looking back in my life, I don't remember ever having an imaginary friend at all. I mean, I just don't have any recollection of any of that. I just have nothing, you know. And of course, today I don't really consider myself psychically sensitive per se. You know, I think I have a pretty good spidey sense regarding reading people. Pretty accurate with that, but you know, traditional psychic stuff, I don't really have that. Now, I will tell you this, whenever I'm around Gregory, and this is something we've commented on for years, Gregory, of course, Gregory Kent's board member, and he hosts Psychic Perspective once a month on Paranexus Universe, and whenever I'm around him, and Grant states this too, that it's like he's an amplifier. I get impressions, I get things, and I'm not even looking for them. I remember the first time, you know, I was with Gregory and had that happen. We were at the old courthouse in Punta Gorda, Florida here. This has been several years ago when it was being renovated, and we were in there, and he says, okay, I want you to just stand here and just tell me what you pick up. And I said, okay, you know, I'm not hoping for much at all. I'm just, all right, so I clear my mind, let things settle a little bit, and I get this random image of a young woman, probably late 20s, 30-ish, something like that, period dress, probably 1940s, had a white dress on, kind of a fluffy bottom part, the top part was very modest dress, she had dark hair, about shoulder length. And that's the image I got. And I'm thinking, yeah, Doug, you know, you're just looking for things. I mean, just a random image comes into your head. And so, you know, I went with it. I was a bit skeptical, but I went with it. I says, okay, I'm getting this image, and I just don't know what that means. And he says, well, what do you think it means? And so then I'm thinking, and I start pacing. I'm not even really aware of it. I just start pacing back and forth, you know, over a 4 foot, 5 foot area, pacing back and forth, and I'm thinking, man, Gregory, I just don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's just a random image. I don't know what it is. And he says, well, Doug, what are you doing? You know, because he saw me. And then it hit me.
Right.
I'm agitated, and then it just all came together. And I said, "Well, that's what's wrong. She's in a courthouse. She's pacing. She's worried about some case that's being argued or whatever." And I says, "Well, is this just in my head? I mean, did I just pull this out of thin air?" And he says, "Nope, that's exactly what I picked up." I says, "You're kidding." He says, "No." And I'm not the only one to get that either. There was a separate report. Somebody else got the same thing. So it's like whenever I'm around Gregory, I get this stuff. I seem to be a little more sensitive to it.
One of the things that I've found over the years is that when I'm in a situation where I can work with another psychic or multiple psychics, everyone's ability is like, it's like a force multiplier. Everyone has more juice, if you will. And it's an amazing thing. And you know, the other psychics would comment as well, you know. And we've also noticed a lot of times that the level of activity goes up. Now, the question is do we have three people that have, you know, more PK than the average person, and that's what's occurring. But just in terms of phenomena, the type of phenomena is greater. And the other thing is, like, you know, it genuinely sounds like you were having a psychic event. I mean, that doesn't sound like, you know, you went in there. You know, knowing you, Doug, and being as analytical as you are and as self-aware as you are, I don't think that you went in there with the mindset to see a young woman in a dress. You know, it's the level of detail which suggests to me that what you experienced was not kind of, you know,
random.
Yeah.
Well, there was some detail to it, too. I mean, I could see her. I can still see her. You know, I could see the dress. It's got one of those flowery, fluffy, not really fluffy, but flowery patterned layers to the top, you know, around the top part of the dress, around the neckline. And flat shoes, black shoes, knee-length dress, you know, with pleats in it, you know, kind of fluffy a little bit. I mean, it was pretty detailed. So I don't know, you know, but it's and there have been other events. I mean, when the interesting thing, and Grant will deny it, but it's true. I mean, it happens all the time. Whenever we're doing a table tipping, you know, Grant will be sitting there and he will answer questions that are posed. I mean, when somebody around the table says, "Well, I wonder if this is it," Grant says, "No." I mean, he just, or yes. You know, I mean, it's so spontaneous. And I've seen this happen, especially with those who are psychically sensitive. And Grant's not either, per se. He's kind of more like me. But I see this when they're in the zone. And it's an amazing thing to see. It's like they're dialed in. And that's kind of cool.
We've got someone waiting to talk, so I'm going to go ahead
it's Jamie.
And...
It's Jamie. So go ahead and bring him on. He just chatted.
All right.
So we have Jamie coming in. Yeah. 941. I know that area code well. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Jamie, are you there?
Yeah. How you guys doing?
Good. How are you, man?
Doing good.
Hey, we have a caller.
Yes, you do.
The hell. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to call in to remind people that there's an international sky watch going on. It's actually active right now. Let me get some details. It's a Facebook group, and it's running. It started on the 12th and runs through the 19th. And people go out and sky watch and take photos or videos and submit it to the group, and you win prizes. Actually, I was last year's winner.
Cool.
So I thought I'd call in and tell you guys about that. I'll drop the link in the chat room if anybody wants to check it out on Facebook and join and maybe submit some evidence.
Sounds good.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I see the link. Yeah, well, thanks. So what other exciting things do you have on your mind?
Well, we've been doing some sky watches lately. It's been kind of hot and mosquitoes been out there, but we've been trying to get out there. We captured a few good things lately. some which are uploaded, others which are not. I've been working on my website. And just doing a show. We got a lot of stuff going on now on our show where we integrated into Future Theater with Bill and Nancy Burns. They stream on my stream now and overnight AM. So we've just been busy researching, and I'm also doing a daily news show. So that's keeping me busy.
Sounds like it. Well, appreciate you calling in and letting us know about the Skywatch.
All right, no problem. I figured I'd give you one caller.
Hey, wait, I got a question for Jamie. Jamie, on this Skywatch, is this the first time this group has organized one of these things?
No, last year they did one. I believe last year was their first. But last year they only did a 24-hour Skywatch, and the weather wasn't permitting for some people. So this year they're doing it for a whole week to give people a chance to get out there and get some footage, some photos to submit.
Okay. So any idea of how many people participated last year? Do they have any kind of, you know, data on that?
Yeah, there was about 1,900 people participating.
Wow.
Yeah, there was people from all around the world. It's based in the UK. And somehow I won with Best Photo, and I won autographed photo and letter from Nick Pope and Whitley Strieber. So they give away stuff like that.
Oh, well, congratulations. Yeah. You ought to ask Doug about his recent award.
Yeah, let's hear about it.
Oh, it wasn't just me. It was Paranexus et al.
Yeah, but you know what? I think they were thinking of you when they awarded it to us. So
yes, so you guys got it by
association.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. What John is referring to is the Paranormal Jackass Award.
Oh, boy.
And Paranexus, along with quite a few other sites, anybody who offers any kind of certification course was included in that. Flamel College, Universal Class, and a bunch of others. I know there was even a couple of psychics on there who were included, and the interesting thing about it was they don't realize what they're doing for us. They're including a picture of our website and a link, and it was great, you know, and as passive aggressive as hell. I mean, there's no way to contact it. Nobody knows who did it. You can't find out who did it, you know, so it was funny.
Yeah, one last question referencing the thing. I know you guys have been working on the ufology courses. Any progress on that?
Yeah, it's a little bit slow right now. I'm working on a bunch of metaphysical courses as well, and the UFO course is going to be integrated in that. And so it's coming along. I've got part of it done. It's coming along. I can't specifically say when it will be completed, but it should be probably later in the summer. But it's coming along. I don't want to put crap out there. You know, I want to be something that's worthy, and that's not just it's not something that can just be found on the net, but, you know, a unique perspective and something that will really help investigators, even the ones who've taken other available courses.
Well, what sets Paranexus apart from other research sites and organizations. So
what's done on it so far is excellent. I mean, Doug's been using me as kind of the idiot test. Like, if John can understand what I'm putting in here, then anyone can understand, because I really don't have a background in UFO research or anything, so it's all totally new to me. And I've really enjoyed what I've read and done so far with it.
Well, he's been kind. Yeah, and I appreciate that, too. There's been, we've got a couple of, I guess you would call, beta testers. They're a Paranexus staff, so anyway, I appreciate that, and it'll be coming out, and I'll be announcing it as soon as it's available.
All right. Thanks for taking my call, guys. I'll continue listening.
All right.
All right.
Thanks,
thank you.
Take care.
Take care. Bye.
All right. So we have a question in the chat room. Let's take that one. Kathy asks, has there ever been any record of proof through EVP or photos or any other technical mechanisms without there being any living human presence around at the time? In other words, cameras set up without people around. The short answer to that is yes. John, you have any comments on that?
I was going to say, from personal experience, I've set up microphones and camcorders in places where there was nobody present, and we've gotten EVPs off of both.
That's actually a kind of a common approach to investigations. A lot of people will set up a camera in a particular room that's maybe reported haunting activity, and they'll also put trigger objects in the field of view of the camera. A trigger object can literally be anything. It can be, I've seen investigators use styrofoam balls on a bed. It can be a pendulum, hanging from something. It can be, it can just literally be anything. Some have even put like a black plastic garbage bag down on the floor, and then they sprinkle talcum powder on it and put toys. One of the things was that the toys were moving by themselves, so they would do that, and that way it would show evidence if the toys had moved. So there's a lot of that been done. I mean, Dr. Ingrid Irwin, our director of EVP research, I mean, she's gotten some great EVPs when there was nobody there at her house. So that happens quite a bit, actually.
See, it's that kind of evidence collecting that suggests that it's not human PK causing that kind of a phenomena.
Yeah, that's true. And yet there are also those cases when human PK is strongly suspected for causing it. I mean, we've even talked about how EVPs can often be the product of human PK.
Right.
I mean, when we talk about belief, right?
Yes,
absolutely. The power of belief. I mean, if you go, you take investigators, especially those who are maybe newer to it, or more the amateurish types who are just really into it and really excited about doing it. They go in with a specific expectation. They've seen the shows, they've heard some of the EVPs on the shows, and they go into it. And there are cases and examples that I've heard about where, it's strongly suspected that whatever they're getting is a product of their intense belief or their intense expectation. And that's why it's so important for investigators to be very centered, very grounded, and go into an investigation with absolutely no preconceived notions.
Absolutely. You've been offering a course in hypnosis on Paranexus. And, a lot of people probably don't make the connection. It's like, I'm a paranormal investigator. What do I need to know about hypnosis? And the answer is actually quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because that plays into a lot of what you were just talking about. If a person has such a strong belief system, they can psych themselves up to actually experience something or see something or hear something. Or when there's a small group, a person can essentially lead that group to an outcome in terms of, in the way that they talk and stuff, to get that group to actually start seeing stuff as well.
Yeah. And since you brought up hypnosis, I mean, we might as well, talk about why it's important even more so, even deeper. Sharon brings up a question in the chat room in regard to your work in hypnosis. When someone states that they have had previous lives and gives facts about that, what do you conclude about that? Does this give any type of proof of anything? Have you done past life regressions in your work, Sean?
No, I haven't done that. I basically, in the work that I did, was more, behavioral in nature, in terms of people having a phobia about something and overcoming that. I have seen past life regression work done, and most of the time I'm not impressed with what I see being done, because I think that what ends up happening is because the hypnotist isn't skilled in his method, that they actually introduce false memories, mm-hmm. and they lead the person.
Mm-hmm.
And once that starts, in my mind, it's done. You've polluted the waters. There's like no coming back.
Yeah.
So anyone that's like interested in having that kind of work done, they better be very careful about who they decide to help them, you know.
Amen, brother. I mean, that's it exactly. And there's a couple of things that I'll bring out on this. I've done a few past life regressions, and I would like to do more because I would like to research that part of it. Now, one of the past life regressions I did was with an acquaintance of mine. This has been some years ago. She's, also got some psychic sensitivity. She went into hypnosis very easily. Good subject. And when I took her back, she described a very detailed story about she was a young boy at the time. This was back in about the 1700s. She was in France. She couldn't quite name the city, but she was in a home that she was in, this cold rock, rock-walled room. She was dying, or the little boy was dying. He was about 12 years old, I suppose, I think, if I remember right. And he was dying from, forget which disease, I'm not sure if it was the plague. It was some disease that was going around. His younger sister and his parents had died from it. I can't remember all the specific details. I have them in the record, but I don't remember them offhand. But she was able to relay this fairly easily. She didn't have to labor for it. That was interesting to me. Now, after it was all done and said, really wasn't able to confirm that story, obviously, because records were pretty bad back then. But I know that there have been some past life regressions and reincarnation type work where there was some pretty specific details. But there's another aspect to this, and I don't know, John, if you've touched on this at all, but this is something that's rather fascinating to me, and I kind of got turned on to this by Dick Sutphin, who's a pretty well-known hypnotist and got a lot of CDs, self-hypnosis CDs out. And what happens is, let me just put it in a simplified form. When people have fears, like fear of the water, fear of snakes, fear of flying, fear of bridges is another one. All these fears, it's fascinating because in hypnosis, when you, in essence, go and do a past life regression, and you take the person back, and so often as in these cases, say somebody's afraid of water. Well, you take them, you regress them, and it turns out that they drown in a past life. So now they have this memory, so to speak, in the present life, and they're afraid of water. Well, the interesting thing is when you go back and you touch that memory, so to speak, in hypnosis, that fear seems to dissipate. And to me, that's a fascinating thing. Now, whether or not they lived in a past life or not is immaterial. It's like when you go back and touch that, it dissipates that. The energy of that fear seems to dissipate. Have you ever had any experience with
that? Actually, on a personal level, at one point, I introduced my daughter to this one psychic, and he's talking to her for about 10 minutes, and he says, and he doesn't know anything about my daughter. Not a thing about her, okay? And within 10 minutes, he says, in a past life, you were a fighter pilot in World War I. And I'm thinking, okay, we're going to crazy land. you were shot in the front of your face, in the forehead, and your plane crashed, and you died during the war. Well, my daughter gets severe migraines that are located in the front part of her head, and she's absolutely, absolutely fearful of flying. But after he told her that, she ended up, like, just accepting it. And now she doesn't like to fly, but she can fly. Which I thought was all rather interesting. And I also thought, you know, it was just interesting in the sense that, you know, he doesn't know her. And, you know, the whole concept, if in a past life you got shot in the head, so you'd have this, like, frontal pain. Mm-hmm. And then you'd have this fear of flying, because ultimately people are afraid of flying because they think it's going to crash and they're going to die.
Right.
I mean, that's the, you know, the basis of the fear. So I just thought it was pretty amazing, given the fact that he knew absolutely nothing about her, for him to come up with that.
Well, there's been a lot of examples of that, where people will have a mole or a what's the term? I know it. It's you know,
like a beauty mark or a birthmark.
Yeah, there you go, a birthmark. Yeah, a birthmark or a beauty mark, and in a specific location that, you know, that translates back to this past life event, whatever it is. Now, the fascinating thing for me, and I don't necessarily believe in reincarnation or in past lives. I'm still waiting for some. I mean, there have been some compelling stories, I'll give you that, but I'm still waiting for a little bit more. But the thing that's fascinating to me is the mind. What if the mind works that way? You know, we have these fears, this energy that's stored in these fears, whatever they might be, and the mind, when you're doing hypnosis and you're doing a regression, the mind essentially creates a scenario, a visual scenario around whatever that fear is. In other words, it's almost like a language. It creates this scenario that can present this fear in understandable terms, so to speak. And when you touch that, when you go there, when you address that fear, that energy, that fear, it just goes away. I mean, I think that's fascinating.
Oh, absolutely.
So let's talk about it. You go ahead, and then we'll talk about hypnosis and investigations.
Well, actually, you know, that's where I was going to go with it, was just, you know, hypnosis plays such a huge part in all this, because, you know, I think that, you know, the general public, you know, has, you know, either been at a nightclub or they've seen something on TV where you got a stage hypnotist, you know, doing that stuff, and you got people doing whacked out things and whatnot. And, you know, that is really not what hypnosis is about.
Right.
You know, that's about taking people that would get up on stage and act stupid anyway.
Exactly.
You know.
They're willing participants.
But, like, you know, we were talking about this a couple weeks ago. You know, professional athletes hire hypnotists to help them do imaging so
right.
they can end up seeing a result.
Mm-hmm.
And then they experience it. And, you know, that goes with the whole, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy thing, you know. If you think you're going to fail, you're just about guaranteed to fail. But
right.
if you can get psyched up to see yourself succeeding, then you can succeed. And when these athletes are under the, you know, being coached by a hypnotist, you know, they're imaging winning, and they're being brought through it. I mean, step by step by step. It's not, you know, imagine yourself being a winner. It's like, imagine yourself at the starting block. Imagine yourself pushing off. I mean, they're taking them through the entire thing and getting that person mentally to that place. And I think that, you know, in investigations, you know, people do that in terms of, like, they create this intense expectation to see something, and they do.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's I always heard about, I think it was Jack Nicholson or Arnold Palmer, one of the two, would actively visualize their golf swing and seeing that ball going exactly where it should be in their mind repeatedly over and over again. Visualization, imagery, is the language of the mind. And that's what hypnosis uses. I mean, in all these hypnosis sessions, we use imagery, guided imagery. That's what it is. And just to let people know what hypnosis is kind of like controlled daydreaming. And a lot of folks have misconception that when you're in hypnosis, you lose control. That's absolutely not true. Hypnosis is more about your control over you than anything, and you will never do something in hypnosis that you would not do otherwise. So nobody can hypnotize you and say, okay, go rob a bank for me. That'll never happen. Now, it's also important to understand that hypnosis is not the same thing as brainwashing, which
right.
occurs over a long, much longer period of time and more intensity. That's a different thing. So hypnosis is a fascinating thing, and it's the way we work. Anytime you're daydreaming, you're in hypnosis. Anytime maybe your kids have been watching TV and you say something to them, they don't even hear you, or you've done it. Somebody's been talking to you. You're so focused on the TV, you don't hear them. That's hypnosis. You missed an exit because you were deep in thought on the road. That's hypnosis. That's all it is. It's focus.
Right. The other thing is, like, I want to make the analogy that when you see and you are working with a hypnotist, it's still about self-hypnosis, except
yeah.
the hypnotist is your guide.
Right.
But it's still all about the self.
Yep.
And that's another thing that, you know, people think that, you know, oh, I don't want to do that because I don't want to be under someone's control. Well, you're not under someone's control.
Exactly.
Because you're still in control. And, like, you know, it's important that you said that you would never do something under hypnosis that you wouldn't normally do fully conscious and awake and stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people would say, well, wait a minute, then, you know, how do you work with people that are afraid to fly? How do you get them to fly? Because normally they wouldn't fly. Well, what I would do over a long period of time, because there's not really a quick fix with this, is you get people to imagine making that trip.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a person who's got a genuine incapacitating type fear, the mere thought of thinking, you know, just the idea of thinking about getting on an airplane is enough to, like, trigger a panic attack or some physical response. So, you know, over a period of time, you know, you're like, you have them visualize that they're getting in a cab and they're taking the cab to the airport. And once they get comfortable with that as a concept, then you move on to, okay, now you're getting out of the cab, you know, you're walking up to the ticket counter, and over a period of time, you basically help this person get conditioned to do all the necessary things they need to do in order to fly. I mean, is that the method that you use? Because that's the other thing. I mean,
yeah.
There's different ways to do this.
There's a zillion different ways. There's just all kinds of them, and that's what's so cool about hypnosis. I mean, you get to create. You know, you can massage that creative side. And one of the things that I do in a lot of these types of things, and there's more than one. One that I use a lot and have used with a lot of success is once I have the person in hypnosis, I you always give them their peaceful place, you know, their safe place. They can go to at any point, and you tell them that anytime I see, you know, peaceful place, you're there. That's one of the commands or suggestions. So I've got them in hypnosis, and I take them to a beautiful canyon, and I get them there. They're standing at the top of this beautiful canyon, safe and sound, and they're looking out over the beauty. And down below, they see, you know, the rocks and different things. Then what I have them do is I have them imagine that they have a balloon in their hand, and I have them look down and look at it, a red balloon, and I have them notice that it begins to inflate with the energy of this fear, whatever it is. It can be a fear, it can be low self-esteem, it can be anything. It's now inflating and getting bigger and bigger with this dark, fearful energy that does them no good. You know, you put all kinds of comments like that in it. And it doesn't, of course, inflate to the point where it pops. But what I have them do, and I tell them that what I'm going to have them do is they're holding this balloon. It's inflated with all this dark, crappy energy. It's disgusting. It's no good. And they're going to pop it and see that energy just dissipate into the atmosphere. And they do. And And I, of course, tell them it's just hot air before they do and all that. And so I have them do that. And then they're holding the remnants of this balloon in their hand, and I have them visualize that it's turning to glass and throw it over the side. Or I won't have them pop it, and I'll have them visualize that it's turning to glass, and I have them throw it over the side and smash on the rocks below, those kinds of things. And it's been fairly effective. There's a comment in the chat room. She says, I couldn't be hypnotized because I would not want to tell anyone my secrets. You want to comment on that?
Well, that's another misconception. Yeah. You would never do anything or say anything that you wouldn't do normally.
Yeah, being hypnotized is not like being drunk.
Yeah, there you go. You know, hypnosis is not the same thing as like Doug was talking earlier about mind control and things like that, because that's is a totally different process. It requires a great deal of time and various drugs, and it's just something very different. So, you know, the thing is if you were ever hypnotized and you said something that you later thought was embarrassing, it would have been the same kind of thing that you would have said if you weren't being hypnotized. So that's not something that you have to worry about. Because, again, the key thing to remember is that when you're being hypnotized, what really is happening is self-hypnosis, and the hypnotist is your guide on that journey.
Yeah.
So you're still in control, but Doug or someone like myself, we would just be talking you to the place that you've already identified that you want to go.
We're facilitators.
Right.
That's it. So here's another thing, too. I don't know if you've ever heard of parts therapy, and I just cannot remember the fellow's name. Nice guy. He wrote a book on it, and I've met him and listened to one of his lectures at the National Guild of Hypnotists convention a few years ago. But I just can't pull up his name, Ron something. Anyway, but an incredible concept, parts therapy. And what it is, you know how in life we'll say, you know, a part of me wants to do this, but another part of me doesn't want to. I mean, we use that analogy all the time, don't we? And
right.
So his process is to... in hypnosis, is to call forward that part of the person who is afraid of flying, or who is afraid of water, or who feels a certain way, or who has low self-esteem, or whatever it happens to be. And he asks that part of them to come forward, and he'll even say, what's your name? And these people will often give that part of them a name. And so he will then address that part of them, and while the other part of them, you know, the main parts are in their peaceful place somewhere. So it's an interesting thing, an interesting concept.
Mm-hmm.
And I've used that before, too.
You know, another thing I don't think that people necessarily realize is that much of the ritual that we engage in terms of our life are also forms of self-hypnosis. Prayer, meditation,
yeah.
a lot of the religious ceremonies. You know, it's all about psyching the person up and taking them to this place. My guess is Sharon is probably actually engaged in certain ceremonies over her life that, in fact, you know, by definition, were hypnotic, if you will.
I'm sure. We all have. I mean, I went to church for years and years, and it's that one of the forms of getting somebody into hypnosis is the repetitive, almost monotonous drawl, you know, the just the ongoing repetition. That's part of hypnosis too.
Yeah. So is that what like politicians manage to do to us all the time? You know, get us to where we're numb, and then they just take advantage of us.
I don't know about that. I'm not going to touch that one with a 10-foot hypnotic pole.
So, hey, Sharon, did we answer your question?
I'm sure we have, because we rock. But let's talk about. You already brought it up, but let's make sure we cement this concept. You know, how the role that hypnosis or the hypnosis type phenomena can play on an investigation. For example, if you psych yourself up for something, you know, that's, and you get what you expect. You'd already mentioned it, but that's something to be aware of too.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
yeah, absolutely.
So be careful of that.
You know, that's why, you know, I was telling you that when we went on that investigation 3 weeks ago and we had the events that occurred, that I was pretty confident that we had not psyched ourselves up to see and, yeah, and have the experience that we did, because that was not something that was I ever expected to see or be part of. And it wasn't an investigative interest for me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was confident that you know, this, what we were experiencing was real and not imaginary.
And that was a good point you made too the other night on that. And that's good. You know, belief and hypnosis they're tied at the hip. I mean, that's what hypnosis is managing your own beliefs about yourself and things. So, if you believe it strongly enough, it's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy, as you brought out earlier. And you just got to be aware of it. You got to be aware of that role that this kind of the human mind can play. Sharon asked about self-hypnosis in healing, and yes, it does work. I mean, there's documented cases of things like cancer going into remission, terminal cancer going into remission. Look at these monks and these different people over where in Tibet and over there where they can basically control their heart rate, they can control their sensitivity to pain. That's easy enough, you know. They do a lot of hypnotic anesthesia for different things, such as childbirth and operations. Does it work on everybody? Not necessarily, but a lot of people it does.
The person that actually taught me hypnosis, he had a video that he had done, and it was actually shown at I can't remember which university that was in Boston, the medical school there. But he had actually a doctor had contacted him.
John
there was
Hopkins.
This woman. No, it was in Boston.
Oh, okay.
John Hopkins, Baltimore.
Baltimore,
but,
yeah.
The gist of it was, is this woman couldn't tolerate any kind of anesthetic or anything to help her with the pain, and she was going to have a cesarean. And so this hypnotist worked for over 6 months with her, like multiple times a week, over 6 months, and got her conditioned not to feel pain. And part of that was, you know, if she started to feel uncomfortable, she'd sing a song. And if the pain really started to get intense, she would ask for a glass of iced tea, and there would be this whole imaging in terms of how, you know, they'd, you know, hand her, theoretically, a glass of iced tea, and then she'd be talking about how soothing it tasted,
uh-huh,
and how the ice was clinking in the glass, and how the uh-huh glass was sweating, and stuff like that. Anyway, so I saw this video, and you see this cesarean operation occurring, and this woman has no anesthetic. She's acknowledging no pain. She's laughing. She's singing. She's asking about iced tea.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was absolutely amazing, because you can
mm-hmm
bet cutting through, you know, abdominal muscle and stuff like that, there was some serious pain there. Yet
yeah,
she was disconnected from it. Now, at a much lesser place, I have bad arthritis in my knees, and I use self-hypnosis in order to control my pain so I don't have to use other types of medications.
Mm-hmm. And I personally believe that, you know, kind of related to this, some of the different things that people experience are manifestations of, you know, the mind. asthma, skin rashes, things like that. And even the, of course, the Eastern philosophy is that any disease that we have is the result of a disorder in the mind somehow. So that's something to think about too. I personally believe, I mean, I've had back problems my whole life. L5 has been a pain in more ways than one for all my adult life. And, you know, when I get stressed in the past, my back acts up. And I know it was that because I would be cooking along fine, a little stress here and there, and then it acts up. And it hasn't, I haven't had a problem with it probably the last year or so, because I think I realized that and started addressing that with it. All right, back, you're not going to do that anymore, are you now? Okay, not really, but something like that. And to my knowledge, no, you can't hypnotize animals unless you're the dog whisperer. So, we've talked about a number of things tonight. We've had one call in. We're getting a little bit low on time. We've got about 4 minutes left. We hope that those of you who have listened to our show tonight or on the archive have enjoyed it. I know it's been a lot more informal. We've just been shooting the breeze on different things, but hopefully it's been interesting topics. You know, if you have a topic you want to consider, you can send it to us. admin@paranexus.org is the email address, or you can just join in. You know, join in the chat room, ask questions, call us up. This is really no different than just having kind of a informal group discussion. So we highly encourage our members and others to even call in and just say, hey, bring up a topic. Let's talk about it. We can speculate. We can think outside the box, do some brainstorming on different topics, things like that. So we would enjoy that. This is where we kind of get together and we share ideas. We share who we are. And, we did answer your question, Kathy. She wasn't able to tune in at the time. So, folks, thanks so much for your time. John, it's been cool.
Yeah, I've enjoyed myself, Doug. I think a good hour that we had here.
Yeah, and so we'll be brainstorming on some topics we can discuss next Monday night at 10 o'clock. And we'll be doing this for a while, and hopefully it'll catch on. This coming Thursday night, we have Paranexus Universe at 9 p.m., Psychic Perspective, hosted typically by Gregory Kent. He's out this week, and so I'm going to be sitting in for him this week, along with Dinah Arnett and Janet Reynolds. She'll be taking psychic readings on the air, but we're also going to talk about psychic development. So if you have questions about that, have wondered about that, join us Thursday night at 9 p.m., same bat time, kind of, same bat channel. And what we're going to do is leave you with a tune by Kevin MacLeod, pretty gifted artist. It's called Ether Disco. Hope everyone has a great night. Thanks for your questions. Take care.
Good night, all. Thank you.
Thank you.